Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory, with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And a fabulous service department to back it all up. Adam Rittenberg in a moment. First, our play-by-play call of the day.
To try to close it on a Tuesday. Alvarez launches deep right field. And this one is gone. And the Astros walk them off in game one. Yordan Alvarez. Are you kidding me?
Ryan Anderson with the call. A disgruntled Matt Cotrillo watching as it happened. Was your TV set still intact because you know the Yankees can't beat this team? I'm just asking.
It was still intact, yes. Because I had to wait for the game to come on next. Had it been the opposite, then may have gone that way.
Then the Yankees fall behind. Depression sets in.
It did for a little while.
Right. It's a 9-inning game, you know.
I'm aware. I'm trying.
Well, no, I'm trying to educate you on these things. You know, like what did I tell you yesterday when the Mariners were winning? What did I tell you in the
show? Oh, it was a 9-inning game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it went 8 2/3. All right, so with that, we bring in Adam Rittenberg, old friend, good friend, and what a job he does for ESPN and also for Sirius. Adam, welcome back.
Good to be back, Steve.
Okay, I want to start now. Obviously, Penn State, Michigan's obviously around here big, but Alabama, Tennessee, the third Saturday in October brings with it this matchup that has not been a competitive matchup. What is the attitude and the mood around this one because of what Tennessee has been able to do?
Well, I think it's really exciting that this game matters again. You know, there's some coaches that I know that grew up around this rivalry. I'd always give them a hard time because, like, to me, this game hasn't really, like, it's played every year, but, like, it hasn't been relevant even in the SEC. It's just typically been an Alabama cakewalk, and that's probably not going to be the case. I mean, Tennessee is playing with as much confidence as any team in college football right now. Their quarterback, Hendon Hooker, who was essentially cast off by Virginia Tech, it's just a great example of the transfer portal. He found a place and a system and a coach to bring out his best, and that's what you're seeing now for the second straight year. And so, you know, Tennessee's offense, whether they're fully healthy or not, can challenge any defense in the country. And with Bryce Young, you know, set to come back most likely, this should be one of the better games of the first part of the season. So really looking forward to it. I'll be with you in Ann Arbor, but after that game's over, I'll certainly turn my attention to what's happening in Knoxville.
No question we're going to turn our attention to that. I'll probably be watching it on the plane because we have the ability to do that. Hooker, I took a long look at him because Penn State was supposed to play Virginia Tech in 2020. And it looks like he's really matured. This is something Alabama struggled with Ewers. This guy brings a different dynamic to the table. What do you think of that part of the matchup?
Well, it's a different offense. It's a fast offense. It's essentially the old Baylor offense. They use every inch of the field, really wide splits. Alabama's defensive backs are going to have to be disciplined and prevent big plays and ideally, you know, find ways to pressure Hendon Hooker. So their conditioning is going to be tested. I do think what we saw from Alabama in Texas from a discipline standpoint is likely not to be repeated. They already went through that experience. They didn't play particularly well last week. So I think they're going to be dialed in. Bryce Young likely coming back is obviously a huge lift for them on offense. But this is going to be a really nice test for that Pete Golding defense, which I think has played pretty well this year. They're better than they were last year. but they I don't think they faced an offense this unique with their ability to score quickly.
So I want to go to the Alabama offense for a moment. There's no doubt Young is just an outstanding player. But I've always felt over the last couple of years, especially the last, I don't know, 5 to 10 years, they've had one or sometimes two first-round draft picks on the outside that you can make plays with. Does Alabama have that now, or has that changed the dynamic of how Alabama has to play?
Yeah, it's a great point. I don't think this receiving core yet is at that level. I think they could be you know, in the near future, but I don't think you're looking at a group with Devontae Smith and some of those players that they've had, Jaylen Waddle, in recent years. And so the other guy that gets a lot of attention, aside from Bryce Young, is Jahmyr Gibbs, the transfer from Georgia Tech.
Yes.
And in talking to a number of coaches, both in the ACC and in the SEC, you know, they say he's a different type of running back than they've had there with his speed, his ability to catch the ball. He's a very versatile player and, you know, can be a real asset for Bryce Young and that whole offense when they don't have that top end guy at receiver just yet. So I think he's the one that Tennessee's going to have to find a way to stop, because Alabama's certainly going to use him in different ways.
Tennessee, you know, the last tape I watched of them, Adam, was I watched the Purdue bowl game, the Music City Bowl, because that was Penn State's opening game. How different is this Tennessee football team now compared to that one that played in the bowl game against Purdue that gave up 2.5 billion points?
Yeah, I think they're better defensively. You know, just a year or two, Tim Banks obviously coming from Penn State to Tennessee as the coordinator. He's a veteran guy. He's been around a long time. And so I think, again, it's not an elite defense, but I think you saw what they did against LSU, saw what they did at times in that Pitt win. I think it's certainly an improved unit, and you don't have to be elite when you have an offense that really believes that they can score, you know, 35, 40, 45 points against almost anyone, and that's the confidence that Josh Heupel has brought to that program. And you know, they weren't a great team last year, but when you have exciting offense as a first-year coach, it can go a long way, and they certainly built upon that with a returning quarterback and a lot of good players at receiver and just a system that a lot of guys want to play. Their defense is better, but they don't have to be top 10 in order to win games there.
All right, so now let's get to Michigan and Penn State. Michigan's played 6 games to this point. I know it hasn't been the greatest schedule on the planet. Adam, I'm hard-pressed to find more than 2 handful worth of mistakes. It seems like they're pretty precise. What do you think?
Yeah, they have been. I think a couple of things that have allowed them to do that, Steve, is that the running game has been excellent, with Blake Corum becoming the lead back and not just being a speed guy. You know, he was the lightning to Hassan Haskins' thunder, and this year Blake Corum's been kind of everything. They're sprinkling in Donovan Edwards now that he's back from injury, but they can still be a run-based, power-based offense, and they have a quarterback in J.J. McCarthy who has been really accurate in the short passing game. They haven't asked him to do a lot. Now, I have a big piece coming out tomorrow on ESPN Plus about J.J. Talk to coaches who have faced him, and they're all impressed with his talent. But they also say, listen, if you can pressure him, he's not as good, like most young quarterbacks. And you know Penn State and Manny Diaz are going to bring a lot of pressure. They're one of the top teams in the country in terms of pressuring quarterbacks, even though they don't blitz that much. So that's a storyline. And then also, he hasn't thrown the deep ball particularly well. He's missed some open guys on deep passes. He wants to do more. J.J. said this week that they have not reached their potential as an offense. I talked to his quarterback trainer. He said this guy can do way more than they're letting him do yet, but he's got to give them the confidence that he can hit that deep ball, he can handle the pressure. One thing he does really well that Penn State's going to have to be aware of, he's terrific on the run making throws. His accuracy, his QBR are all off the charts when he's on the run. So I think the big thing for Penn State is to keep him in the pocket and put him under duress.
And the other element, too, is that if he wants to pull the ball down, J.J. can run. That's something that Cade McNamara really was not proficient at.
No, he wasn't. And that's a big change. Overall, they just can do a lot more. They can do different option things. They ran an RPO bubble play against Iowa that really Michigan had not done before. But with Cade McNamara out, they have been, again, conservative with how much they want J.J. to run. They don't want him taking a lot of hits, obviously don't want him injured. And so I think that they will not run as much as he wants to run. They may not take as many chances as he wants to take chances. But as James Franklin brought up at his news conference, they're also always in the lead. So they don't have to do much. And so that's why the start of the game is so important for Penn State, to take a lead, to put pressure on Michigan, and then we'll see if the young quarterback can kind of respond.
In fact, I'll give everybody what the number is, because obviously I'm prepared to broadcast the game. Michigan has scored on its opening drive in five of the first six games of the season. Michigan has also scored on their opening drive of the second half four of six times this season. So, when you're talking script or a halftime adjustment, they come out ready to go, which means you have to be ready to go.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think the pairing of Matt Weiss, who was the quarterback coach last year, and a guy that Jim Harbaugh would have taken to the Vikings if he got that job, and then Sherrone Moore, who's done a terrific job with the offensive line, I think that play-calling combination has worked. Jim is obviously very involved as well. And found ways, the Iowa opening drive, to be that methodical against a really good defense and score a touchdown there, that's huge, especially if they're one of those possessions they're getting the ball and if they're scoring on both of those possessions on a regular basis, it's going to be really tough to get the lead, really tough to beat them. You've certainly seen this, Steve. They hadn't run the ball well the last few years. They're running the ball much, much better now, and so these are two teams that ideally want to run the ball, that want to control the line of scrimmage. So which one is going to give in that sense? And the one that struggles is going to need its quarterback to do more, whether it's Sean, whether it's JJ. The guy who's kind of in that position is going to have to deliver for his team to win.
Which then brings me to what your overall impression has been of Penn State through their five games to open the season.
Well, I think we're trying to figure out, is this a similar Penn State team to last year, or is it a much better one? I sense that it's better. I don't know how much better. I think the run game and the emergence of the young running backs has been really encouraging. Offensive line has been better, and that's great to see. But, Sean Clifford's numbers are sort of Sean Clifford's numbers. And so can he take another step in his game? I know that he cares a lot about legacy, and he believes this can be an elite offense. I haven't seen that yet, but there's still a big opportunity to kind of show people just how good they can be on Saturday. And then defensively, there's a lot of talent on that defense. I think Manny has done what he's always done, which is to be aggressive. I think those players have responded to him in a positive way, and I don't have as many concerns on defense as I do. Can this offense be elite? Can this offense win big games like this one? We're going to find out, because this is the Michigan defense, Steve, that I don't think has taken as big a step back as I thought they would, losing the personnel they did from last year's Big Ten championship team.
Now, a big reason for that, I think in part, is A, they're talented, but B, they've also had an offense that's allowed them to play with the lead. And I think that's been a big factor for them in how they've been able to play games, because they've been setting the agenda.
Sure, for sure. And again, they have not changed a lot schematically, even though they have a new coordinator. I think there's some different strengths on their defense. Their interior line, for example, is more of a strength this year, whereas last year they had those two great pass rushers in Aiden Hutchinson, David Ojabo. I think defense in the secondary, DJ Turner is certainly somebody who's on Penn State's radar. I think the linebacker group is still one that can be exploited at times. And it's like we're saying the same thing here, that Penn State's got to jump ahead. They have to win that first quarter, win that opening stanza, so that Michigan can't get comfortable, especially if Michigan is running the ball like they want to run the ball and like they really have run the ball for the most part with Corum primarily, and also Donovan Edwards. Donovan Edwards is a home run threat, so you have to try to keep him in front of you and prevent those explosive plays in the run game.
And not only is he a home run threat, he's a home run threat as a receiver, too. And that brings up Ronnie Bell. They didn't have him at all last year. What has he meant to what Michigan do?
Yeah, he's just a tremendous overall player, experienced player. Thankfully, he doesn't seem to be showing effects of that knee injury that essentially wiped out his whole season. And the blessing in disguise for Michigan last year is that they were able to develop other receivers. You know, Michigan's receiving core is probably, you know, second or third in the Big Ten, behind Ohio State, obviously, and Maryland. You could make an argument that they're number two, but I really like that group overall. You know, unfortunately, Eric Aull, their top tight end, has been out, and it could be out for a while. But Schoonmaker has really emerged as a guy that J.J. McCarthy has looked for as well. But Ronnie Bell has played a ton. You know, knows how to make big time catches, and is sort of a leader of a really talented overall core.
Adam, an absolute pleasure. I look forward to seeing you on Saturday over in Ann Arbor.
Yeah, likewise, Steve. Travel safe. Thanks for having me on.
You too. Thanks, Adam. Adam Rittenberg, ESPN, and also with SiriusXM. We'll come back with more in a moment. That was a soup-free half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
If you put all your eggs in these games' baskets, then you can put yourself in a situation where you don't handle the ones before that you need to, that everybody wants to look past. So that's kind of the fine line of managing those two things. That's where not only is this Saturday critical, but it's also the thing that, you know, we've talked about in the past, is it's all of the progress that you can make the other 364 days a year that add up.
That's exactly right. And that's how you build to a game like this. Doug in Wellsboro joins us. Hello, Doug. How are you today?
Steven, how are you?
I'm well. Thanks for asking.
Did James make any changes to the bye week as far as schedule, practices, anything like that?
Yes. What they have done in the past is they've gone corrections on Sunday, off day Monday, practice Tuesday, practice Wednesday, and then scrimmage on Thursday. That's the developmental non-travel guys. And then Friday, Saturday off for everybody. This time he changed it to Sunday corrections, Monday off because that's a school day, lab day, things like that. Tuesday practice, Wednesday practice. Then when others went out and recruited, including James on Thursday, the coordinators, Manny Diaz and Mike Yurcich with Stacy Collins, all ran practice, and it was a practice on Thursday, and then a limited D team scrimmage on Thursday night. But they practiced on Thursday, and the coordinators ran the practice Friday, Saturday off, then Sunday back to work for the game. And they used Thursday as a bonus Michigan practice day.
So they cut back on developmental and went for more Michigan specific. Is that correct?
They had the main group out there, but development is always part of it every day anyway. So instead of doing the grad assistants are running the D League scrimmage, and that's what they had on a Thursday. They practiced last Thursday. You know, I'm not talking about belting and hitting each other. No, they didn't do that. But the main group got in a shorter Thursday practice that concentrated on Michigan, then they did the D-League scrimmage.
Is the key going to be get them in third and long and make McCarthy throw like third and five or longer? They've got to shut down Corum somehow and get them in third and long, I would think.
They got to win first down on both sides. First down is going to be a big down. Now, instead of being second down and three, it's second down and eight. Different. Now it gives you a better shot at the scenario you're talking about, a third and long. You also have to make sure, don't let them get out of the gate like they've been getting out of the gate. They have scored in their opening drive, and they've all been touchdowns, Doug, five of the six games this season. Hey, don't let them do that. When they did that at Iowa, it was a methodical drive, and Iowa, which can't score, I mean, they might as well put up 100 on the first drive. So you've got to be able to play even with them, and then you set the tone and you take the lead.
Real quick, is there any official word on Keandre Lambert-Smith?
That's up to James to answer that. I'm not at liberty to talk to answer that. That's his answer, not mine.
Come on, Steve. It's just me and you. No one's listening.
Well, that's not what the station says. The station's telling everybody listens.
Okay. I know we're up against half hour, so thanks a lot, Steve.
I mean, that's the counter to everything.
Come on, Steve. You got to give me this info.
Doug, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
See ya.
All right. Next half hour, Nate Bauer. I think based on how the last 3 weeks went, I'd have Judge Bunn in the leadoff spot. He needs to actually see the ball hit the bat. Don't you think?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, no what?
No
bunting.
So
you were impressed by the three strikeouts?
I wasn't, but I still don't want him to bunt.
Come on, make it fun.
Leave that for somebody for IKF who can't hit and apparently couldn't play defense yesterday.
Oh, you're just so negative.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, KROs 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. Which is so important. And a great service department to back it all up. They're the best across the board. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia. Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online at sunburymotors.com. Phillies, Braves in a rain delay to start their game today. And it's only the National League today, no American League games. So Matt is going to be watching Marshall in Louisiana tonight.
No, I'll be watching the other games today.
Scouting.
Sure, we'll call it that.
Sending emails to Aaron Boone. Why don't you try this?
You know, you got to help your team. You got to be there.
Well, your game was sold out last night, but it is a market of 8 million people. All right, so, yeah. You don't like how I approach things, I can tell.
Better than the Braves tickets costing $8 to get in.
Well, actually, I'm for that. No. You don't understand. I'll be honest with you, Matt. I'm for that. TV networks are putting a lot of money in, right? More money than ever, right? They're getting more from regional TV networks than ever before, right? To me, instead of trying to gouge for every dime, I'm all for people like saying, "Hey, you know, these tickets are $8. Come on in." Great. That's how you get people in. Don't gouge them. See, to me, I'm 180 of that, Matt. I don't want the fans gouged. I want them in the building.
Oh, of course. If I'm a fan, I would do that in a heartbeat if I could. But I'm just saying the perception of that also means that it's not a hot ticket, which is not good for a playoff game. But you're right.
My perception is I want fans to go to the game. Right? I don't really care about that part. I don't care about that. I'm getting a lot of money from my radio network. I'm getting a lot of money from my TV contract, my regional TV contract. I'm getting a lot of money from my national TV contract. Well, guess what? Do I have to now say, hey, it's a playoff game, so the tickets are $110? What does that do? I'd like to see the Yankees do it for $8. And guess what? Guess what the $8 ticket opens it up to? Like the real fan. Not the corporate one that wants to be seen. See what I'm saying here?
Yeah, no, I hear you.
I think it puts more atmosphere in the building, to be honest with you. I mean, no offense, but the wine and cheese crowd is not like, you know, what you call enthusiastic. You know, the people you hang with.
Oh, my almighty!
You know, as you become a bigger star along the way, you kind of lost your roots, Leon, lost your way a little bit. No?
Well, maybe. I don't know.
you're not buying? Okay. Well, let's go to the 16th green. Nate Bauer on 3.com, Blue at Illustrated. Welcome, my friend.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. That's not accurate, and I'm missing a golf day today, but the work must be done.
I understand.
It's demanded.
No, I understand that. All right, so so go through a bye week. You've written a lot of articles, put a lot of thought in. So what is it through five games? Where is this football team right now, Penn State?
Yeah, I got to stop you to put a lot of thought in. The bye week is my mental vacation. But here's my issue. You know, and even before we get to Michigan, when I look at Penn State, I see three games that I took something from and two games that I didn't really take a whole lot from.
Right, sure.
And the issue is the two games that I didn't take a whole lot from and can't really quite figure out are the two most recent. And so when you add and compound a bye week on top of that, it feels like a month since I've seen Penn State play a game resembling what I think they are or want to be. You know, and so that's kind of the conundrum that I have right now is sizing up who they are. Nick Singleton has changed. Catron Allen has changed.
Yeah.
The entirety of the identity of Penn State's offense. They create a dynamic that Penn State did not have last year. You know, in terms of the ability to have a balanced offensive attack, their receiving options and quarterback play are not as dynamic as they were last year, but they're more than serviceable for what they've had to face to this point in the season. And defensively, I think Penn State's been really good.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I do. I think that they will continue to be very good. I think that the challenges that they have coming are, again, more than they've faced previously. They have not faced anything as versatile as Michigan will be, right? They have faced some one-dimensional offenses that are pretty good, but they haven't faced a team that can kind of beat you in both directions. So yeah, I feel like I have a pretty good grip on who these guys are, but you know, this weekend will tell me much, much more than I feel like I presently know.
So I'll flip to the other side. Has Michigan faced a defense this versatile?
And this is the
part where I realize there's always this fatalistic attitude. Oh, they got this. They got this. Well, guess what? What do you have? Chopped liver?
Yep. I just watched this morning. It's like a YouTube bootleg of the broadcast, right, of a Michigan game. I just watched them against Indiana.
Yeah.
That was not an impressive win for Michigan. And they ended up pulling away, but that was a 7-point game into the fourth quarter.
Well, yeah, it's tied with 7 minutes going in the third, and Indiana had a touchdown called back. We're not so sure it should have been called back.
Yes. And so did I see a Michigan offense that was lights out? No, I didn't. Did I see a Michigan defense that was unstoppable? No, they had some sacks. I mean, that Indiana team is not impressive, but they moved the ball. They had opportunities. Blake Corum, I think, I don't know why. He reminds me a little bit of Evan Royster. I don't think he is a home run. Like, he hit a home run in that game, but doesn't have, like, he's not going to blow you away, I guess, on his own. He's not going to make those plays on his own. It demands that, as offenses do, a conjunctive or a cooperative effort, right? It takes that offensive line being good. It takes J.J. McCarthy putting them into good field position.
Yeah.
Steve, I pulled some stats this morning. Five of the six offenses that Penn State or that Michigan has faced so far this season have been ranked 98th or worst in the country in scoring offense. And four of the defenses that they've faced so far this season have been 98th or worse in the country this season. Like, it's hard to get a good grip on exactly what they are, too.
Yeah. It's hard to get a read on them, in part because the non-conference schedule was not great. And now they've played in conference. Maryland pushed them to the wire. Even Billy Edwards, the backup quarterback, came in. He threw a touchdown pass. And, Iowa, here's one of the interesting parts. Michigan has scored on its opening drive in five of the six games.
Yeah.
Right? They played with the lead. They've also scored in their opening drive four out of six times to start the second half. So they've been good in those situations where it's given them the opportunity to play without as much stress. How about that?
I started to watch it. It's all blending together for me right now. But didn't Maryland fumble the opening kickoff?
Yeah, right off the face mask.
So I think when you combine that, I'm seeing now what James Franklin was talking about on Tuesday, which is how the game changes for Michigan in the way that it has been dictated by time and score.
Yes.
The defense can change what it does for Michigan. The offense can change what it does for Michigan based on having those advantages. And so, yes, I think that Penn State will represent by far the toughest test that Michigan has faced to this point in the season. But I think that there's a counterbalance narrative that James Franklin is forewarning, which is very simply, don't put yourself in a hole. Don't go out to
exactly.
Michigan and find yourself down 14-0, because if you're trying to play catch up, it's going to be much more difficult to do. They're going to take the air out of the football. They're not going to be a team that you can just explosive play to death. That's not the way that it's going to work.
And the other element is, you talk about the number of sacks. Yes, they do get sacks, but how many of those sacks? And then watching the Indiana, it's a good example. How many sacks were, I'm behind, I got to throw the ball, and they have to throw the ball. And that's why when you start looking at numbers don't tell you everything. You got to actually watch the games to see, and that's where they've been able, and they do get sacks. They got guys, Morris is really good off the edge. He's an impressive player. No doubt they have some impressive guys that can make plays, no doubt. But situationally, it's played to their favor as to how the games, because they've taken care of business, by the way, in the first three quarters themselves. I mean, they put themselves in that spot.
Yep, very much so. And if you think about it in context of what Penn State is, you don't want Sean Clifford to have to be under those circumstances either.
Yes.
You don't want Penn State's offensive line to be under those circumstances. True. You don't want to take the ability of what arguably is your best home run hitter in Nick Singleton out of the game and into pass protection.
Exactly.
Because right? Like those are the domino effects that those circumstances can have on the game. And I absolutely think that is James Franklin does it. It's very interesting to me because people talk sometimes about how I don't know if elusive is the right word, but that he doesn't say much at press conferences. I disagree with that wholeheartedly. He told you what's going to happen on Saturday or what the keys to the game for Penn State are, which is Penn State defensively cannot give up 5 yards on every first down. Can't do it, right? They have to be able to limit Michigan's running game on first down specifically and force second and seven, force third and long. Get into those circumstances, and Penn State is in a much better position defensively than it would be otherwise. And on the offensive side of the ball, again, you cannot play from behind, right? You cannot find yourself in those circumstances because it's going to be a tough hole to dig out of.
Yeah. Mike Shrewsbury did meet with the media today in Minneapolis as part of the Big Ten Media Days. What was your impression of what he brought to the table?
Yeah, it was kind of the greatest hits of the summer for him. Right? Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I've been having kind of this conversation with our message board and our online community at Blue White Illustrated. Trying to kind of glean some insights as things are going along here in the preseason for them. Nothing's really changed. they have more offensive firepower than they did last season.
No doubt.
And that is very much thanks to the introduction of Cam Winter from Drexel and Andrew Funk from Bucknell.
And they both, you're talking about a couple of guys that have more than 1,200 points apiece in their career, so...
Totally capable,
yep.
Experienced pieces that Penn State has added to the offensive end of the floor. But most critically, in terms of the narrative for what this team is this season, yes, you've lost John Hara, but Seth Lundy is a stud defensively. Jalen Pickett is a stud defensively. And if you can build around those guys, kind of carry over that foundation that you had last season and add to it a little bit of offensive firepower, you give yourself a better chance to win some of those games that they came up just a little bit short on. So, yeah, I thought he was good, but I didn't think there was a ton of, new information.
No.
Of what this team is and what it can possibly be.
Look, the only new information that came out in the entire 2 days was how measured the commissioner was when it came to expansion. That's the only news that came out of it. What he said in July and what he said yesterday were not in the same ballpark.
Yeah.
He very measured about it. So.
Yeah. Yep. It's I'm not quite ready for basketball season, but I'm getting there.
Well, let me put it this way. When November 7th rolls around, I better be ready. So I'm.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
there you go.
So I mean, and I'm not going to get too deep into it, but I like what I've seen when I've gone. How about that? And I've gone. I've gone maybe 7 or 8 times. So
I will be interested to see what the influence of Kebba is, right, in terms of the interior of that offense and defensively, what he can provide Penn State in terms of a big. And just so everybody knows,
it's Kebba Jai, okay?
Yep.
As he said to me, he said, Mr. Jones, he says, the N is silent. I said, well, my last name's Jones and the J is not. So we had a good, but it's Kebba Jai is how you say it. Just so everybody knows when you go to the games, that's how you say it.
And he will be a name that I suspect Penn State fans will very quickly become familiar with and need to know how to pronounce his name.
Yeah, well, so. I mean, really, a lot of potential, but also, let's face it, he'll need help because talking about Zach Edey, Hunter Dickinson, Trace Jackson Davis. I mean, he's got a big job against some really experienced guys. He'll endure it because he's a talent unto himself. But you think about it, you got a big job, man.
Yep.
And he does at a tender age. But you know what? Yep. He's got the talent. So,
and that's not, as you know, the only way the game is played.
Of course not. No.
Absolutely. You know, you don't have to be, it's just not as critical as making three-pointers. That's the bottom line, is make threes and you could be in business. And Penn State, I think, is trying to do that.
They are better equipped from long range than they were last year.
Yep.
We're always better equipped with knowledge on the show when you show up.
Ah, stop. I'm blushing.
That was the goal. All right. I'll check mark another goal off for today. My friend, thank you so much. Appreciate you.
Always appreciate you having me on. I will see you in Ann Arbor.
I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to it, Nate. Thanks.
All right. Yep.
Nate Bauer on 3.com, Blue White Illustrated. Matt's final thoughts on a panic-filled weekend after this.
You know, there's been discussion about studies that we've done in the off season. We added an extra day of practice. Staffing-wise, we're able to be in a position where we have analysts and people that are able to get ahead for us and stay ahead. I think that's helped. And then also, you know, like we've talked about you know, this point of the season, about how we rotated and played guys to be as healthy and as fresh as we possibly can be. Depth has played a part in that.
That's sort of the answer I gave Doug, isn't it?
Pretty much, sort of. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. All right, go ahead. Tell everybody I know the Yankees aren't playing tonight, but you're still panicked.
Well, my big panic is, I was just thinking about this, is I don't know what the time frames are going to be if the Yankees series gets to game four. I just don't want it to be at the same time as the Eagles Cowboys, because then we got a problem. I'll make it work, but I prefer not to do that at the same time.
Yeah, no problem. I'm watching the football game.
What I'll probably do is put the Yankees on the computer and put the Eagles on TV.
I can flip over and look. Oh, look, it's 2-0. Great. Got it.
But hopefully we won't have to worry about that.
Just the mere thought that you're scared to death of it.
I'd like to see it happen.
Sure, why not? I think it's just for the sporting fun of it. Sure. Imagine that being your most difficult decision. You have a good life.